Random Moments in a May Garden by James Saunders, with Barbara Jefford as Sophie and Peter Jeffrey as David.
Yes, I think you'll need to close in a little. Just a little. This way, yes. Can you move a tiny fraction to the left, sir? Otherwise we shan't see you for the lady's hat. Yes, that's good. Yes, that's good. Now, let me see what I can see. Yes. Now, I wonder, could the two little girls sit together, do you think? Such a pretty pair, dressed alike. It would be rather nice. Yes, yes, if you sit there, and the gentleman behind, is there a chair? Yes, splendid. Splendid. There's rather a cluster on that side. I think the little boy might come over to balance the picture. Is there room on the bench for the little boy? Splendid. Now, if you'll all keep quite still now. Quite still.
The main problem at the moment is the roof. They can't do anything up there in this kind of weather.
I'd better pray for fine weather then.
Otherwise, as you will see, everything's progressing very well. They should be starting on the decoration next week or so.
So when do you think we shall be able to move in?
Well, I don't want to be over-optimistic. Say the end of next month, God willing.
And the weather.
Same thing, I suppose. The kitchen. Have you both decided how you want it?
Yes, we do want the pine paneling.
Ah, you do. Good, good. Very wise.
And some kind of embossed paper on the ceiling. You know the kind of thing. Victorian-style pattern.
Yeah, fine. Shall I choose a pattern for you?
Yes, if you would. Sage green would work.
Sage green. And the cupboards, of course, you want kept. Dressers, so on.
Oh, yes, certainly. This new window is a great improvement.
It does give a good view of the garden, doesn't it? Quite important, I think. Lady of the house spends much of her day in the kitchen.
Bit of a mess out there at present.
Oh, by the way, I came across something in the cupboard. Interesting relic. I think I left it in there. Yes, it is. Old photograph. I found it under the lining paper. Must have been there for generations.
Not much left, is there? What happened to the rest of it?
Oh, it stuck to the shelf. I prized it off, not realizing what it was. Left most of the emotion behind. Just these two little girls left. But I thought you might like to see it. They're rather a charming pair.
Victorian.
Early occupants, I suppose. And perhaps a wedding group. Did you see the large buttonhole on this bit of coat?
Such serious expressions.
Well, it was a serious business in those days, having a photograph taken. None of your Polaroid snapshots. You just had to compose yourself and wait. That's why they always photograph workmen leaning on their shovels. Only way to keep them still. Been a standing joke about workmen ever since.
Sweet children. Pity about the rest of the photograph.
Hey, you could cut them out and put a little oval frame around them. They do quite good repro ones nowadays. Some people like to keep a relic from an old house.
It might have been taken anywhere.
Oh, no, it was taken in the garden. But you see this bit of skyline? It's the same, I checked.
Oh?
Anyway, I'll leave it in here in case you want it. Now, about this sage green. I think it might be wise if I show you the color charts for the kitchen units before you make a final decision on that.
Quite still now. Quite still. Quite still. I'll count to five.
Katie and Anne. Two little girls. I'm not a little girl, though. I'm 15. When the photographer said, "Will the two little girls sit together?" I pretended not to hear. I think I can hear a cuckoo. The stupid pigeons make so much noise, I can't be sure. I wanted to stand, not sit. I feel more graceful standing. I felt right standing there. I inclined my head a little to one side and gave a calm gaze into the absolute middle of the camera lens. I willed myself not to let my eyes stray. I wanted to seem calm and direct and enigmatic, which is what I am. I've been called all those things, so it must be true, by different people. Granny Burridge called me calm, and Cousin Harry called me direct, and Uncle Percy called me enigmatic. Uncle Percy gave me a secret which no one will ever know. Cousin Harry is standing at the back, next to my mother because he's tall, and next to where I was. I kissed him once to see if his moustache tickled. It didn't. I forgot to tell him why I wanted to kiss him. He was rather surprised. I was too. It was an impulse. I believe in obeying one's impulses. I don't often, but I believe one should. I have been kissed by men with moustaches, but they've been old and a long moustache is different, especially when accompanied by a beard. Not that my father is old. Older. I asked Cousin Harry when he began to grow his moustache whether he hadn't a more adequate way of indicating his maturity than by growing hairs under his nose. Then I suddenly spoiled it all by blushing. I don't know why I never blush. I hate blushing. If he'd teased me about it, it might have been better, but he pretended not to notice, so I had to as well. I suppose he thought he was being gallant. To pay him out for seeing me blush, next time we met, I spent the entire time staring at his ridiculous moustache. I sat opposite him so that our knees almost touched and asked him questions about history, which he's supposed to be good at. Well, he is good at it, better than Miss Peake, who's a wrinkled spinster and obviously knows nothing of life except from books. When Miss Peake gave us notes on King Henry VIII and his numerous marriages, I found it really rather grotesque. I darted a glance round the class, but no one else seemed to find it anything but normal. Not even Alice Appleby, who told me, the headmistress once told her, she was too grown up for her own good. She was flattered. I'd have been. Cousin Harry was suspicious at first. He thought I was teasing him about his pet subject, but I played the earnest seeker after pearls of wisdom. I'm quite a good actress. And as he got into his stride about the real causes of the restoration of the monarchy in 16, whatever it was, I gazed fixedly at his upper lip until his voice began to falter because he realized I was doing something and didn't know what. I willed myself not to look once at his eyes, and I managed it. And also, I learned that you can find out much more about someone by looking at their mouth and by looking at their eyes, in spite of what people say. Eyes don't tell you anything. Contrary to popular belief, they are an inexpressive feature. They can cry or look tired or squint in the sun, and that's about all. It's true, I've tried it with Katie, covering all her face except her eyes. I couldn't even tell if she was smiling or not. But a mouth changes all the time. People are given away by their mouths. I've noticed that since. Perhaps that's why we're told to look each other in the eye, so that we won't give each other away. And perhaps that's why men wear moustaches and beards to cover themselves up. I learned something about Cousin Harry by gazing fixedly at his mouth, which his moustache is too immature to cover. I learned he's shy. All this I worked out for myself, learnt it and put it together. Not from books, from life. Uncle Percy gave himself away. Now he can never be honest with me again. He has to treat me like a child, and I have to act like one. How still we all are. How still. There's a fly on the back of my hand. Walking. I can't look down. I can't even flap my hand or swat it, or I shall come out blurred, and I'll get the blame for spoiling the photograph. And sat still. See how still Anne sat. Why couldn't you sit still like everyone else? Well, I can. I don't want to be called Katie Fidget whenever they show it to anyone. I can just imagine how awful. I'd go through the whole of my life with it. The perfect photograph in memory of the wedding of dear Emily. Where is she now? Why isn't she in the photograph? It's her wedding. Only there in the corner, little Katie, all blurred. What a fidget. Katie Fidget. She always was a fidgety child. I wonder if Georgie will fidget. They've sat Georgie on the other side. He was standing behind me. He put his bony chin on my shoulder blade and moved it about. It hurt. I told him to get off. I had to shrug my shoulder up, only I was afraid he'd bite his tongue. That was considerate of me. Only nobody will know. I wonder if I'll ever get credit for it. In heaven, perhaps. And anyway, if he'd cried, I'd have got the blame, because I'm older and should know better. Anne never gets the blame if she upsets me. I'm pig in the middle. One day I shall be grown up. I shall be as old as Anne, and then as old as Emily, and get married, and then as old as my mother with children, then as old as Granny Burridge, and then I shall die, like Grandad Burridge and Granny Filkins. And Bertie. I'm 11. Bertie would be 13. Anyway, I didn't want Georgie's monkey face next to mine. He always looks funny in photographs. Georgie had to go to the other side to balance the picture. Suppose otherwise it would fall over or something. Silly way of putting it, balance. Balance is for weight, not pictures. He'll probably crack the lens. He's sitting next to Uncle Simon and Aunt Mabel. Uncle Simon came back from Canada. He wears an American hat. He only does up the top button of his coat, but Uncle Percy does all his up all the way down. Uncle Simon's waistcoat stretches tight when he sits down. Looks as if the buttons are going to fly off. He wasn't fat when he came back. Georgie spilt something down his front. Don't know what it was. My mother was ages trying to get it off so that it wouldn't show in the photograph. Would be more typical if it did. I hope this fly shows, but I don't suppose it will. My hands are folded, one on the other, as I've been taught. I'm wearing a large hat. I'm looking at the camera. This picture will last forever, but I shall die.
Pick me up, darling.
New dress.
Like it?
Very much. It suits you. I like the neck.
Not too severe. It's the new line.
Very elegant.
Is there a hook at the top?
No. Should there be?
Well, not if there isn't.
Why'd they put them on anyway? Isn't a zip enough?
They're to stop lascivious drunks making nuisances of themselves at parties. Drunks can't manage hooks and eyes.
Is that a fact?
Try it. Ashtrays. We need ashtrays.
I suppose when women are liberated, we'll have them at the top of our flies.
When women are liberated, there'll be no need.
Hmm?
Oh, damn.
What?
Brand new, straight from the shop, terribly expensive. And the hem's down, look. The stitching's gone, bugger and sod.
Well, you can take it back tomorrow and complain.
I'm tired of complaining about shoddy things. It means going all the way into town.
Well, ring them up, get them to fetch it. It's their responsibility.
They won't, darling.
Of course they will, if you swear at them.
Anyway, it's not worth it. Anyway, it doesn't help me now, does it?
Mm-hmm.
It really is too bad. I shall have to tack it up, and they'll be here in half an hour, and I haven't skinned the peach.
All right, I'll pin it. Have you got a pin?
Well, it'll show if you pin it.
No, it won't. Give me a safety pin.
I haven't got a safety pin.
Hold on, I've got one in my pocket. Stand straight.
What are you doing with pins in your pocket? You're like a small boy.
On the trousers with the cleaner's ticket. I put it in my pocket because I don't know where you put pins.
I throw them away.
You can't throw safety pins away. It's a waste.
How funny you are.
Well, you should think yourself lucky. There you are.
Let me see.
Okay.
Oh, thank you, darling. Well, do I pass?
With a push.
There's a spot on your sweater.
Hmm?
Coffee or something.
No, he doesn't notice.
Put a clean one on. You've got plenty of clean ones. Or a tie. Wear a nice shirt and tie.
It's a tiny spot.
Well, it's up to you.
Yeah. Look, here, I poured you a drink.
Thank you. Cheers.
Cheers.
Don't let me drink too much tonight.
Why not?
It's not good for me. I get maudlin.
I haven't noticed.
No.
Anyway, it probably does you good. You could unload your innermost grief.
Not with friends here.
Well, what are friends for?
Oh, not for that, or you'll lose them. And what have I got to be maudlin about? A nice husband, on a good salary, 3 lovely children, out of the way. Good friends, lovely house, and another lovely house as soon as we can move out of this pokey place. Oh, that kitchen. I'm just longing to work in that kitchen. What an ambition, eh? For a middle-aged ex-graduate to bake pies in a bigger kitchen. Why did we never move before? David, why did we never move before when we needed to? It's crazy moving now. There'll only be us two and the au pair. We could live in a single room.
With the au pair?
Without an au pair. We could eat out. We could travel if it wasn't for your job. You could give your job up. We could go to the country and grow vegetables. We could live in a caravan.
What about the kids?
Oh, bugger the kids. We've done our bit. Let them get on with it. All those things, all those millions of things I haven't done in my life. And all we can think of to do is to move. Which we should have done years ago. Why have we gone through our life doing things too late? Making do. Poking about in tiny kitchens. Getting next door's records through the wall. Look at the garden. We never got it right. We never finished putting that patio down. It's ridiculous. I must not drink too much tonight.
I'll write it on your forehead. Sophie must not drink too much tonight.
Oh, no, no. Promise you won't let me drink too much.
All right. I'm going to have another drink now, and I'm not going to give you one.
But they're not here yet.
Yeah. Give me your glass. Oh, if only you didn't...
What?
No, nothing.
What were you going to say?
Doesn't matter.
Here you are.
Cheers. Oh, I haven't put the peanuts out. Tragedy upon tragedy.
You've got a lot locked away somewhere, haven't you?
What locked away? What do you mean?
Well, all this stuff about your happy childhood seems very fishy to me.
I did have a happy childhood. I don't understand why you don't believe me. I should know. Just because you didn't. I had a happy childhood, really happy. I'm quite contented with my life. I just get maudlin sometimes. It means nothing. It's probably the menopause. Meaningless. Gone. That's them.
Emily was married today. Now, that's strange. You can say someone was married and mean two different things. For instance, Uncle Simon was married while he was in Canada, but his wife was still in England. Sounds like a riddle. It's the difference between the past participle and the adjective. Emily was not married, and was married, and is married. Adjective, past participle, adjective. Language is strange. At school in the English lesson, it seems so matter of fact, so cut and dried. In the dictionary, each word has such and such a meaning. But when I try to write a poem, it all goes fuzzy. There should be a book which is the opposite of dictionary, where you could look up a feeling and find the word for it. I'm full of feelings with no words to fit them. Perhaps that's what being experienced is, having enough words in your mind. But I heard my father say Uncle Simon was an experienced man, a man of experience, and Uncle Simon says almost nothing at all. I write in my diary most days, and now and then I write poems. Don't know why I do it. Perhaps putting things into words stops them from dying. I was talking to Cousin Harry about words. He was in one of his rare, serious moods. He said something interesting. He said... It's gone. I've forgotten it. Yes, he said, nothing can exist until you give it a name. But as soon as you give it a name, you build a wall around it. Its name is its prison. I understood at the time what he meant. Then he said, there's a paradox for you, my dear Anne. And laughed. He often laughs when he said something serious, if it embarrasses him. That night I wanted to write a poem. I usually light the candle by my bedside and write it in bed. But I couldn't start. I couldn't write a word. I blew the candle out and then I started to cry. I cried and cried and cried myself to sleep. In the morning there was nothing. Katie heard me. She mentioned it at breakfast. I got very angry. I said, nonsense, of course I wasn't crying. What have I got to cry about? You've dreamed it, you silly goose. That day I tore all my poems up and burnt them in the boiler. They weren't any good. Cousin Harry is 17. He wants to go to university, but Uncle Simon hasn't any money. Not enough for that. I don't think cousins are allowed to marry. The camera lens looks at me, but it doesn't see anything. How still I am. I think that was a cuckoo. Polly Daventry said that cuckoos make their noise exactly once every second. But I don't believe her. She makes things up. She pretends to know everything, but she never gets anything right. She's teacher's pet. If noises showed on photographs, I could count the cuckoo calls. I'm sitting up straight, as I was taught, with my hands folded nicely and a fly crawling over them. Anne is sitting next to me, and Uncle Percy is behind with Aunt Lottie. She'll be on the edge of the picture, in her dark, shiny dress with her dark, shiny hat, looking into the distance as if she's waiting for a train to come to take her away. Then there's my father and mother. They're in the middle. And then... who? I've forgotten someone. Granny Burridge is sitting at the end on her wicker chair. She does nothing. She sits and watches. When she's tired of watching, she closes her eyes. She'll be good at this, watching the camera. If we had to sit here for half an hour, she wouldn't mind. An hour, 2 hours, all day she'd sit. She's got nothing else to do. Sit watching the camera all day long and come out clear as clear. She's deaf. Sometimes people shout at her and she pretends to hear, but she doesn't. Grandad Burridge died last year. I expect he's waiting for her. Once I tried putting my hands over my ears to see what it's like to be deaf. Anne asked what on earth I was doing. I couldn't tell her because Granny Burridge was there, though she couldn't have heard. Then there's Uncle Simon and Aunt Mabel. They're both sitting down, and little Georgie. Cousin Harry. He's the one I've forgotten. I wonder where Emily is. She was married this morning. They rang the church bells. You have to pay them to do that. She'll be married for the rest of her life. If Arthur dies at sea, she'll be a widow. Hope he doesn't. Arthur is an orphan. He hasn't any family. He was brought up in an orphanage and went to sea. He's not in the Royal Navy. He's been round the world. He stands very straight and hardly ever laughs. I can't imagine what it's like not to have a family. Perhaps I shall ask Emily to ask him. I know where she is. She's upstairs changing her dress because they're going away for a honeymoon. If you put your hands over your ears, you can hear your heart beating.
Absolutely splendid.
Mm. They were quite good, weren't they? They were marvellous. How do you get the stones out without cutting them in half?
There's a special instrument for it.
Well, you've got a special instrument for getting stones out of pieces. My God, what a sybaritic house.
You poach them first.
That's right, then. You push this thing in and it kind of claws them out. It's like a sort of caesarean operation.
Oh. And then you simply squirt the cream in.
It's terribly simple, really.
Oh, so clever. I'm always meaning to try these things, but I never seem to get round to it. I don't know why. The days aren't long enough.
And the days were not long enough, and the nights were not long enough.
What's that, Elliot?
I've no idea. My head's stuffed with scraps of dead poetry left over from a dreadful education, like a poetical rag bag. Redeem the time, redeem the dream, the token of the word unheard, unspoken, till the wind shake a thousand whispers from the yew, and after this our exile.
I think I'll just have a little more of this.
I've just remembered a dream I had last night.
What was it? It comes like a crow. I've forgotten what it was.
No, I never remember my dreams.
Did you ever read Algernon Blackwood?
It comes like a crow and leaves like a thief, and its fingers are sad. That was it.
Well, it sounds like a riddle.
I was at school. I was giving out prizes. I was due to speak, only this boring vicar was giving an interminable sermon about dust and lust.
Dust and lust, really?
I'm sure it was all very
Freudian. Oh, I love hearing dreams. Come on, what happened?
The vicar went on and on about dust and lust, and the kids sat in stony silence. It was really embarrassing. So I turned to the person next to me, who I think was David, and I said, quite night. And everyone rolled about laughing. And then it was my turn. I stood in front of all those eager, upturned faces, all waiting to hear the secret of life. I had enormous self-assurance. I let them wait. Then I said, it comes like a crow and leaves like a thief, and its fingers are sand. And there was silence. Nobody got it. This beautiful, beautifully simple expression of what it was all about. I couldn't believe it. I said again, it comes like a crow
and leaves like a thief, and its fingers are sand.
Kids were gigging. I started to cry. Tears rolled down my cheeks, and I woke up crying.
David!
What on earth are you on about over there? I'm offering you the cheese.
Thank you, darling.
Try the little round one. It's delicious.
Somewhere inside us, we have the answer, I suppose, which we never get.
To what?
Bugged if I know. When are you moving, Sophie?
Well, as soon as the builders are out. Depends on the weather, a month or two.
You're having a house warming?
Naturally.
No, I do admire you, Sophie.
What for?
Well, coping, you know. You always seem to be on top of things.
Do I? I'm not.
You're trying to put me down, aren't you?
No, I am not trying to put you down, David. I
had to dream of it after you fed us so well. I'm paying your compliments.
As dinner table conversation, what you say is getting entertaining.
Oh, isn't it hopeless? Here am I, trying to broaden your narrow horizon so that when you retire from your dull business,
I don't want my horizons broadened.
Leave them alone.
I'm quite content with my view of life.
You haven't got one.
David, when I retire, I shall grow roses, read books, talk to people when I want to and not otherwise, play chess, go to bed early, take baths at midday and go into a pleasant decline.
Yes, and then what?
Then what? Then nothing.
Like a poetical
I should die. What else?
Mark, really, you don't believe life is that shallow.
Of course he doesn't. He's a poser. He's as terrified as the rest of us.
Terrified? What of?
The meaninglessness of it all.
What all?
Life? My dear chap, life.
I don't find it meaningless.
All right. What's it all about then?
Do tell us.
I haven't the faintest idea.
Well, then, now, David, if I knew the second law of thermodynamics, which I don't, it wouldn't make a scrap of difference to the smooth running of the physical world, would it?
Honestly.
What an arrogant man you are. Do you think the universe gives a damn whether we understand what you call its meaning or not? It'll go on regardless. So sure way we don't have to know why any more than we have to know the laws of gravitation when we learn to walk. Our job, David, as human beings, is the same as that of any other animal, to survive and propagate, which means earning a living, supporting non-productive dependents, and getting as much satisfaction as we can on the way. A meaning is a luxury, my friend. It's a luxury. It's strictly non-essential. If there is a purpose in life, I don't need to know. And if there isn't, I don't want to know.
Yes, but...
Have some more cheese. Catherine, cheese.
Now you're talking about something I understand.
Ah, yes.
And leaves like a thief, and its fingers are sand.
The kids were giggling. I started to cry. Tears rolled down my cheeks. And I woke up crying.
David?
What on earth are you on about over there? I'm offering you the cheese.
Oh, thank you, darling.
How's the new house going, David?
Oh, it's getting along. When are you moving in? In a month or two, we hope.
Are you looking forward to it?
Yes, I think so. Yes.
Aren't you sure?
No, I feel in a kind of limbo at the moment, neither in one place nor in another. It'll be our last home, you know, almost certainly. I'm not feeling.
You're having a house walk.
We shall die there.
I do admire you.
And our past will be elsewhere.
I went down to the river with Anne and Cousin Harry. I don't think Anne wanted me to come, but Cousin Harry said, "Very well, my child, why not?" He often calls me my child. Then Georgie saw us going, so he came too. Anne said, "Oh, if it's going to be a family outing..." She walked out in front, hitting at the grass with Cousin Harry's old walking stick, while he asked Georgie riddles. But then she stopped and waited for us to catch up, as if she didn't care. It's not really a river, it's a stream. It dries up sometimes. Georgie said he saw a fish, but I don't suppose it was. He got his feet wet, of course. There were some creatures flying about over the water. Cousin Harry said they were mayflies. He said they live all their life in one day. They're born in the morning and die when the sun goes down. I didn't believe him. Anne said, "Of course, course it's true. Everyone knows that. It's a fact of science. Georgie found one in the grass and squashed it with his thumb and said, "You are a beast, Georgie." Georgie said, "He's got to die today, so what's the difference?" Anne said, "All the more reason to let it live." I don't know why she was so upset about one mayfly. There must have been millions there. If I only had one day to live, I'd get out of breath. Cousin Harry's stick was given him by Uncle Simon when he came back from Canada. It's got a silver knob on top. There's something strange about Uncle Simon. Nobody ever talks about him going to Canada. I don't know why he didn't take Auntie Mabel with him and Harry. He was away 7 years. It seems very odd. I asked Anne about it, but she wouldn't tell me anything. I wonder if I shall ever find out. A fly is crawling over my hand, but I shan't move. I'm wearing a big white hat covered in pink tulle. I'm sitting still. I think I'm leaning over a bit, but I can't help that. I can just see the photographer out of the corner of my eye. He's got a droopy moustache like Uncle Percy's, only longer. I'm staring at the camera. The camera stares back at me with its one eye. Uncle Percy's behind me. I heard him sigh. Aunt Lottie, Uncle Percy, Mother, Father, Auntie Mabel, Uncle Simon, Granny Burridge, Georgie, Katie, Anne, Cousin Harry.
More coffee, anyone?
No.
Catherine, a little more coffee.
Oh, plenty, thanks, Sophie.
My parents were chronically unhappy people for much of their lives, perhaps most of their lives. My mother, when she was dying, she knew she was dying, she said to me, "You know, Anne, I've lived 63 years and my life has meant nothing to me. I shall be glad to go." "Only it seems so meaningless," she said. My father, too, died bitter.
Why?
Well, he felt life had disappointed him, tricked him and cheated him, I suppose. He'd accepted it all. All his life, he'd accepted his unhappiness as part of the way of things. Only right at the end, he rebelled. It was too late. He lay there, swearing. He died, swearing at the pain, the final imposition on him. Swearing at his life. He lay there, writing his life off with swearing.
It's absurd.
Unfortunate.
Mark, it's absurd. We accept it because there's nothing else we can do, but we don't have to pretend we can see a logic in it. It's absurd by any standard. And to live an empty life and then to die in pain, leaving nothing. You're a businessman. Would you think that a reasonable proposition? Would you buy it? Would you be able to sell it?
Well, I don't accept your premise. Life's only absurd if it has to be like that. Well, I'm not such a pessimist. My own life's neither sad nor unhappy.
Good for you.
If there's something wrong with people's lives, they can be changed.
Whose? My father's? My mother's?
Obviously not now. But...
Well, so what about them, What about them? I mean, do you write them off as experiments that fail? Rejected prototypes, They were my parents, Mark. They were people.
And your parents are dead. The dead are dead. Whether they were happy or unhappy makes no difference anymore.
Oh, to me it does.
Well, then you must find a way of coming to terms with it. You can't change the past. It's your problem now, not theirs. It's a problem in the present.
And what's the solution?
It doesn't matter about the dead because they're dead, and therefore it doesn't matter about the unborn because they're unborn, and soon we shall be dead, so it doesn't matter about us. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying we can't help the dead, that's all.
Does that make them less important?
To us, yes.
Because we can't help them.
They don't need our help. What are they?
I was going to a psychiatrist some years ago, and I put it to him that there was nothing he could do about the past. with all his skill, about all those people in the past. They were lost. He could neither help them nor give them meaning. All he could do was help us escape from them.
Well, what else do you want?
I don't know.
What did he say, the psychiatrist?
Oh, I forget. But it was to do with me, not them, his answer.
Compassion is all we can offer after the event.
Well, yeah, but what's that to them? What will the future's compassion be to us?
Come now. You think we need it?
Oh, I wasn't thinking of our cozy circle.
Brandy, Mark. More brandy, everyone.
Yes, I will.
Right,
I think Chris said you. I'll stick with this.
There's an adagio by Albinoni. Whenever I hear it, I cry. Sometimes I put the record on in the evening when I'm alone, knowing it'll bring tears to my eyes. Why should I do that? It's pleasant, of course, in an odd way, but what a strange use for sadness. And why sadness? For what? What do I grieve for? Albinoni? What's he to me? He's dead. He should grieve for us.
What do you mean by that, Catherine?
I don't know.
I took Eloise to see a film. She was quite young then, 15 or 16. It was a very beautiful film, very moving. As we came out of the cinema, I asked her if she enjoyed it. She burst into tears. Mm. She meant yes. She was crying bitterly, as if she'd lost something.
The nameless yearnings of adolescence.
Oh, why should she cry, though, with her life ahead of her? She was crying as if she'd already lost it, whatever it was. Mm.
More brandy. Anne, more brandy.
Oh, thank you, darling.
Sophie, you're very quiet.
Cousin Harry was coming to stay Sunday with us with his parents. But they arrived without him. They said he had some reading to do for an examination. Couldn't see why he couldn't take one day off. Aunt Mabel said he has no respect for Sunday. But then I've no influence on him, and of course nobody else bothers. She pressed her lips together. Uncle Simon didn't say anything. He tried to pretend he hadn't heard and looked embarrassed. My father took him into the garden to look at the shrubs. He's my father's younger brother. I could see them through the window. Uncle Simon was standing with his head down and his arms hanging loose as if they didn't belong to him. I'm sure they weren't talking about shrubs. Something seemed wrong. I was angry. Aunt Mabel was saying something about how I'd filled out. I felt as if she were accusing me of something. I wandered into the kitchen, but Katie and Georgie were in there teasing each other. I felt I wasn't wanted in the garden. I knew if I went up to my bedroom, I'd cry or break something. I stood in the passage. I heard my mother and Aunt Mabel coming out. I ran to the front door and opened it and went to the gate. I felt suffocated. And there was Cousin Harry running along the road towards the house. He said, "How nice of you to wait for me." I said, "We heard you weren't coming. Have you changed your mind?" He said my mother's food was too good to resist. I asked him why he'd been running. He said he'd felt like it. His face was red and shiny. We stood there, one each side of the front gate. The sun was out. He'd taken his hat off. I took it and put it on. I thought he'd try and get it back again, but he didn't. He looked solemnly at me. As soon as I caught his eyes, they slid away, as they always do. We went in. I had the giggles. His mother made a fuss, of course, as if he'd put everybody out by deciding to come. He gave me a sidelong glance, as if we were conspirators. After we'd eaten, I said I thought I'd go for a walk. Cousin Harry said he'd come too. I wanted to ask him about his father. I'd never had the courage before. Just as we were leaving, Katie came out and asked where we were going. I said, for a quiet walk, hoping that would put her off, but she asked if she could come. Then Georgie appeared. I said, if it's going to be a family outing. Georgie looked upset. Cousin Harry said, yes, of course you can come. I went on ahead, but they were so slow, I waited for them. We walked down to the stream. I was angry. I don't know why. My mother would say it was one of my moods. Georgie was very irritating. I shouted at him. I hardly said a word on the way back. Cousin Harry talked, but I didn't answer. After tea, I went up to my room. I was lying there feeling sorry for myself when I remembered what the date was. April the 29th. That was the date Bertie died. He was 8. Georgie is 8. I felt wretched. I tried to cry, but I couldn't. I remembered my mother crying when she told me Bertie had been... I forget what she called it. Taken away, I think. And I tried to think of little Bertie's face, but I couldn't remember it. Wouldn't come. All I could see was George's. I thought, this has been a wasted day. A day wasted out of my life. Do I have enough days to waste them like this? I went downstairs. Cousin Harry had gone home.
Well, goodbye, Mark.
Oh, wait a minute, I haven't got my coat.
Mm, the gentleman's coat.
Here's one. Who's this?
Mark?
That's my wife. Do you mind?
Well, right, family. I suppose she's gone for her last pee. She always has to have a last pee. She pees like the fountains of Rome.
I take that as a compliment.
No, you know what it means. She's insecure.
Her bladder is.
No, she's marking out friendly territory as animals do. Compulsive peers are afraid of losing their friends. She's not peeing. She's beating the bars.
Spare me the psychiatry, David.
Here I am, darling. Here we are. Here's your carrot.
Oh, no, not at all.
Have a good pee, did you?
What's so funny about visiting the toilet?
David thinks you do it for security.
Oh, no, I do it for relief, Digby, darling.
Is anything the matter, so if you seem a little upset?
The fact is, I'm a little scared.
What obviously?
Well, I don't quite know. I'm finding myself a... No excuse left.
For what?
For not doing what I want. For not enjoying my time. For not finding some justification for my old age, I suppose, when it comes.
What do you want to do?
That's just it. I don't know. I've lost direction somehow. I've lost touch with what I want. When I think back to my childhood, it was all so straightforward. There was a directness, a simplicity.
Actually.
No, do we have to lose it? Why should we? When I was young, my wants were immediate. They came from inside me. And then something happened. The world began to press in on me as it does. Make its own demands. Perhaps I gave way too easily. The externals took over. The voice from inside became fainter. Passing examinations, putting on a good exterior, pleasing a husband, looking after the kids, keeping the place nice for somebody else, always for somebody else. I gave way, I suppose, to outside demands. Somewhere along the line, I gave over the controls. I came down from the bridge into the engine room.
No, it's not a bad way of putting it.
I'm a coal shoveler. I sweat below decks to keep the ship going. I don't know why I do it. I don't know where I'm going. Nobody tells me. If I ask the question, I'm met with blank looks. Oh, what business is that of a stoker? And in a way, it's true. If you don't know where you want to go, what does it matter where you're going? I've lost. You see, Catherine, I've lost contact with my desires. Or perhaps the desires have gone. There's just a kind of yearning, sadness, where they used to be. But the result is I honestly don't see the necessity of living at the moment. Not that I'm unhappy. I'm not really unhappy, not even that. I simply don't see the necessity. Isn't that awful?
I don't think many of us could put it into words.
I don't want to put it into words. I don't want to have to put it into words.
Catherine!
A newborn babe can't put into words what it's doing here, but my God, it wants to stay.
Sophie.
It wants to stay.
My darling, they want to go now.
Oh.
Goodbye, Sophie. It was a lovely evening, darling.
Marvellous. Goodbye. Do let me know if I can be of any help over the mooring.
Goodbye. Goodbye, Anne.
Goodbye, Anne. Take care. Yeah, I always take care. Bye. Goodbye, David. See you next to the new house, I suppose. Yes.
Come round and have coffee one morning, Sophie. We can have a proper chat. I've been meaning to mention it. We don't see enough of each other lately.
I know, David. There aren't many of us left.
Oh, true.
Bye, Sophie. Lovely meal. Hope the move goes well.
Bye, Digby.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Look after each other.
Thank you.
Yes, it did, didn't it?
Small drink before bed.
Why not?
Come on, then.
Food was splendid.
Was it?
You surpassed yourself.
Oh. Nice people.
Odd way of putting it.
Why?
Our oldest friends. Makes them sound like strangers.
Well, they're still nice people.
Yes. Here you are.
Thanks. Cheers.
Cheers.
I wonder which of us will be at the other's funeral.
Good Lord. What put that into your head?
I don't know. It's interesting, though, isn't it? Why should it seem strange to mention it?
Not strange, just...
bad taste.
No, no. Just a bit out of place after a pleasant, successful evening.
Yes. Do you think Digby was all right?
How do you mean?
For driving.
Oh, I think so.
You only think so?
Well, if he's not Catherine to drive.
Yes. Well, that'd be a bit out of place, wouldn't it? Well, after a pleasant, successful evening, if they crashed the car.
Oh, darling.
Only joking.
Is something wrong?
No, nothing.
You're probably tired. Yeah, you go up. I'll tidy up down here.
Oh, no, leave it.
No, you know you hate to come down to a mess.
Maria can do it.
She's away tomorrow, remember?
Then leave it. It doesn't matter.
No, only take me a minute.
David, leave it. Please leave it. It's not important. Put some music on, darling, while I'm finishing my drink.
Well, what would you like?
I'd like the first one your fingers touch. Where's that photograph again?
It's over here. What were you talking to Catherine about?
At the end.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you. Oh, nothing much. The tribulations of growing old.
Who's growing old?
Well, we all are, I suppose, in a manner of speaking. I'd like another drink.
Are you sure?
I'm absolutely sure I'd like another drink.
All right.
Pretty girls. So serious. Such pretty dresses. I was discussing how we tether our lives to external factors, and as they disappear, so we're gradually cut adrift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Thank you, darling.
You mean the kids?
The kids and... Oh.
Oh, cheers.
But what significance we find in the bringing up of kids I've never understood, intellectually. They only turn into us, don't they? Usses. Silly usses. Cheers.
You sounded a little upset.
Well, talking to Catherine. Did I?
Mm.
Yes, I suppose I was a little. I'm not now. I suddenly feel very comfortable. Isn't it comfortable? After guests have gone. Though I love having them. It's like... You know, Christmas, when the kids were small. Christmas night, after the noise and the eating and the entertaining of our parents, when suddenly they've all gone to bed and we're left having a last drink in a room full of echoes. As if behind the quietness, behind the moment we're in, the other time is still going on. Rustling of paper wrappings, movements... Voices saying momentary things one would think would be immediately lost forever. And the Christmas tree, do you remember? How the lights reflected in those beautiful, fragile glass balls jump and dance as the sugar mice and the golden nets full of chocolate treasure are pulled from its branches. So that afterwards, in the quiet... There's an extra stillness in the tree. A stillness containing all that movement. Fragile, glittering moments preserved in stillness. Kept safe. Not lost. Not really lost. Look, David, look. Look at these two little girls.
Yes, they're sweet, aren't they?
Sweet. And so conscious of the moment, so intent on preserving themselves. Look, look how serious this one, how solemn. Mm. And the little one, leaning slightly to one side, afraid to move. She let her eyes wander, do you see?
You see? Oh, so she did, I hadn't noticed.
And this is what's left of them. Their future is the same as their past now. Lost. Gone. All gone.
Sophie.
As for the others, whoever they were, they've gone completely. Stripped. Off. Stuck to a shelf in a kitchen cupboard. Oh, what a destiny. I wonder what we shall be remembered by. We'll keep our photograph in a cupboard.
There's always the kids.
Mm. You're not really going to frame it, are you, this scrap?
Oh, I don't suppose so.
Lend me your biro.
Mm. You are? What do you want it for?
I don't think I want pictures of dead strangers in my new house.
Aunt Lottie, Uncle Percy, Katie, Han, Father, Mother, Cousin Harry, Auntie Mabel, Uncle Simon, Georgie, Granny Burridge, and a butterfly. Yellow butterflies fluttering about round the camera. Perhaps it wants its photograph taken. Perhaps it wants to live forever. Oh, if it could only settle on the back of my hand. Fluttering. Fluttering about the only moving thing. Nothing for you here, butterfly. Go and find a flower while you've still got time. But it doesn't go. What does it want? It's teasing us. Laughing at us sitting here so solemnly. I follow it with my eyes until it's gone, gone, gone.
It was Carter's idea, really.
The surveyor?
Hmm.
Just the kind of idea he would have.
Darling, what have you done?
Put moustaches on them.
You are a fool. Come on. You're drunk. Bed.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's beautiful, Sophie. A lovely house. I'm so glad for you. And the garden, it's a mess.
But it'll be marvellous. So much space, so much potential.
Well, we've got a rough idea of how we want it. We're going to start with a patio out here. Mm-hmm. We really are this time.
How's David on gardening, Sophie?
Oh, well, you know.
Yeah. Don't I know? I don't think Mark's ever touched a shovel in his life.
But your garden's beautiful. I always admire.
Oh, we had a firm in Madeira. Instant landscaping. Cost the earth. And we have this little old man called Adam. Would you believe
that? 125th on F8, I think. Now, look, if you all stood over there, we'll get the best of it and avoid the builder's rubble. While the camera doesn't lie, it doesn't have to tell the whole truth either, does it?
Oh, are we having our photo tour?
Naturally. Oh. Special occasion, isn't it? To be captured for posterity by my new Super Deluxe 35mm SR, isn't it? Come on, now, let's get going while the sun stays out.
Where are the others? Well, they're discussing double glazing. Oh. Mark knows how to get rebates.
Oh, Mark always knows how to get rebates. I'll go get them.
I didn't know you had a camera.
I tell you the truth, it's the first time I've actually used it. Oh. I hope they come out. Well, how are you settled in?
Oh, settled in. Hmm? Do you know what one of the builders said about the little back bedroom? He was plastering up there. I took him up a cup of tea and he looked out of the window and he said, "This is a nice room." You know, he said, "This is a room I wouldn't mind dying in."
Praise indeed.
Here they come. I managed to winkle them out.
If I'd known about this, I'd have worn my other tie.
And over there, then. Come on. Come on. No larking. This is a serious business. David and Sophie, in the middle, please, as befits your proprietorial position.
Oh, that's very well.
Mark, don't lark about. You're like a small boy. Right. Now, where's that bloody button?
It was Emily's wedding day. We all had our photograph taken in the garden. Then while Emily was upstairs changing her dress, the photographer said he had a plate left, so would we like one more? I was standing next to Cousin Harry. I inclined my head a little to one side and gave a calm gaze into the absolute middle of the camera lens. Granny Burridge creaked in her wicker chair. In front of me sat fat Uncle Simon with his comical hat. Uncle Simon, who ran away to Canada and then came back again. And next to him, Aunt Mabel, who took him back, but never forgave him. I was sure I could feel Cousin Harry's eyes on me, but I knew if I looked round, they'd slide away again, so I willed myself not to. His hand touched mine, accidentally, and stayed touching. I didn't move. And then the stupid photographer made me go next to Katie. Georgie was teasing her. He was sent over to the other side. Uncle Percy gave me one of his odd smiles as he made room for me, as if to say, nothing really happened that day, did it? You've forgotten about it, haven't you? It was nothing. It was nothing. I wanted to turn and tell him so. He was standing just behind me. Next to him, at the end as usual, mousy Aunt Lottie gazed into the distance. Aunt Lottie, who lost all her children and always wears black. My mother and my father stood in the center. It was very quiet except for the birds. Uncle Percy sighed behind me. A butterfly went by.
That's fine. Lovely. Now, just one more. Ready? Watch the birdie.
That was Random Moments in a May Garden by James Saunders, with Barbara Jefford as Sophie, Peter Jeffrey as David, and Julie Hallam and Helen Worth as the girls Anne and Katie. Photographer Anthony Hall, surveyor Vernon Joyner, Digby Dennis Hawthorne, Anne Elizabeth Morgan, Mark Hugh Dixon, Catherine Ellen Sheehan. The play was produced by Richard Wertley.